Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Gee whiz. What happened to my intro here, huh? Houdini. They used to go on the Staten Island Ferry, going back and forth, that's right, singing their classic Friends. How many of us have them? As you're probably muttering that to yourself on the drive home at 5, as you've crawled back in your car, your van, your pickup truck, your Jeep, and listening to your terrestrial radio, or you happen to be still at work at your workplace, you have your stationary computer, or maybe your laptop computer, you're listening online, or through the many apps. I would suggest the WABC app for sure, but I know there are many other apps. And you'll be listening to this program from all around the world, and if you happen to miss it, you can always catch up on it on a podcast. But Friends, how many of us have them? And in talk radio, the business in talk radio, it's like we always have daggers coming out of our eyes at times, looking to knife our adversaries and even our own homeboys and homegirls when they're part of our own family, like here at WABC. But that's not true of Bernard McGuirk, producer of the morning show, of the Imus in the Morning Show, or Imus himself.
Coming up tomorrow, Psychos 2 with Curtis. How's Curtis Sliwa doing, Bernie?
Doing very well. He's killing it. He's got that 5 o'clock show. Let's see. Yesterday he had on the...
You know, I listened to him do that. You know, he's pretty good.
He is fantastic. They finally got around to picking somebody appropriate for the live and local 5 o'clock show.
Plus, I like him. He's got a... You know what I like about him? A number of things. But one, he's got a great sense of humor.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, normally I'm not attributed to having a good sense of humor. Being self-deprecating, yes, because of my fractured phrases, spoonerisms, malaprops, and the way I botulize the English language. But I accept the props, and I will be, as I am every Thursday morning, in the psycho segment, because who is more psychotic than yours truly, Curtis Sliwa? That's always Thursday mornings on the Imus in the Morning Show, 7:35. Make sure you're listening tomorrow. Or, like I said, you can always catch it on the podcast. But friends, how many of us have them? We know that friends of Bill and Hillary stretch way back to their days at Yale University. Sometimes the friends have mysteriously died along the way. Okay, they have lists of those. I'm not going to go in that direction. I'm just going to stick to the friends of the Clinton Foundation. And the Associated Press, back-to-back, belly-to-belly, with Judicial Watch, has kept the full-court pressure on Hillary and this presidential campaign to try to explain the email drops that have resulted in us learning about some pay-for-play allegations that occurred when she was Secretary of State, the gatekeeper, Huma, who would steer them towards a meeting if they had made a sizable contribution to the Clinton Foundation. On the line to discuss that is Christopher Hahn, progressive pundit, radio host, political consultant, and attorney based here in New York. Thanks for jumping on board the drive home at 5 again, Chris.
Thanks, Curtis. How you doing, my man?
I've had better days. Hey, look, I'm not supporting Hillary as you are, but I'm not supporting Trump either. I'm going third party with the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, because I really feel soiled when I think of the crackpot screwball Trump, or in the case of your candidate, Hillary. Someone who appears at times to be lying, crooked, and always so evasive. I mean, how do you defend her in the allegations about the many meetings that she had with people who had given sizable donations to her family foundation, the Clinton Foundation?
Well, you know, Curtis, I think that's a fundamental problem with our system here, where people need to raise money to get elected to office. I think if we had a fully publicly financed election system, we would never have situations like this. But to just single out Hillary is just not fair. Anybody who has ever raised money for office in this country has taken meetings with people who have given money to them. That's just a fact of the way it works in this system.
Oh, no,
that
Christopher.
Doesn't mean that doesn't mean they do special favors for them, but that does mean that, if they call, they get their calls answered.
Oh, there's no question. And in fact, it was that moment I'll never forget in the South Carolina Republican primary campaign, McCain versus Bush 43, where McCain turned on Bush 43 and said, "What? You mean if a donor calls up at the same time that an average citizen calls up to seek some kind of service from your office, you're going to respond to both equally?" And Bush 43 obviously lied to us and said yes. And McCain said, "Well, of course I'm going to answer the call of the donor." That I understand, Chris. I understand running for office and being in office.
Right.
And I understand Hillary with Justin Timberlake yesterday doing those ugly selfies for $35,000 a shot. I understand that. But Secretary of State, that's a different position. You're not running for office there.
Yeah, but when you've had a long political career like she had, you are still in that same circle. So anybody who's ever had that political career is going to be subject to those kinds of calls. Doesn't mean they do the job for them. Doesn't mean they always get the answer that they want, but they do get an answer. And that's just the way it is. And it's a sad fact. And that's why everybody who's critical of Hillary right now should also be critical of the system itself and be calling for publicly financed elections to take money completely out of politics.
Well,
without that, it's just partisan finger pointing.
I know.
You're not that kind of guy.
Christopher, as you know, you're in New York State. I'm in New York State. New York State has some of the most restrictive laws about campaign financing that have ever existed. And yet, New York State is now the most corrupt, both for Republicans and Democrats in the nation. In fact, in New York City, if you raise money, for every dollar you raise, you could end up getting $8 from the schmuck, the putz taxpayers, in terms of matching funds. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to give a colonic to the corruption that permanently is embedded in the government as we know it.
Right. Well, look, I mean, again, I think that the New York City system is a step in the right direction. And I think that most of the people that abide within that system do stick to strict limits on how much they can take from individuals. And I think it's been relatively successful within the city of New York. The corruption has been at the state level where the laws are kind of a little bit more lax. And there's a little bit more room there. And quite frankly, really the corruption has come from people who have been so embedded in the system in the state on both sides of the aisle that they have been doing it for so long that they've forgotten who they report to, and that's the people in the state of New York.
Now, Christopher Hahn, you're supporting Hillary Rodham Clinton, and you've been doing so, and you've been obviously carrying her shield into battle. But don't you think as the summer is winding down and we're approaching Labor Day and then the really serious intent to sprint to the finish line, November 8th, begins, that it's time that Hillary finally have a press conference? I mean, look, Trump always has these impromptu press conferences, and I'll be the first to admit, he oftentimes sticks his foot in his mouth. But Hillary is more in control, has more handlers. Why isn't she conducting a press conference?
I believe when you run for office, you should appear in public. I think she should have press conferences. I'm not going to defend that. I don't know why that hasn't happened. Now, I know she's given lots of interviews, including interviews on places like Fox News and others. But I do think you got to go there and you got to take all comers. And quite frankly, you got to answer the questions. I don't like Donald Trump's answers, but at least he's taking questions. He's not necessarily answering questions, but he's taking them. And I think that she needs to go out there and have a press conference too, and to end this silly criticism, which is a legitimate criticism, that is self-inflicted. And I expect that she will do that after Labor Day or maybe shortly before.
Now, it's kind of hard for her to answer for the activities of her husband. As you know, we're drawn back to that tarmac in Phoenix, in which former President Bill Clinton was there giving some kind of speech. He was prepared to leave. He heard that the attorney general was in town. She was on her plane with her husband. He boards the plane. This is right before a decision was going to be made by the FBI director as to whether possibly prosecute, not prosecute. What do you do about Bill, the uncontrolled one in this campaign, who seems to have a divining rod in more ways than one, that operates independently and autonomously and does whatever the hell he wants to do?
I think you got to put somebody out there on the campaign with Bill standing next to him, who Bill's a little bit physically intimidated by, that will not let him go off message, will not let him go places where he needs not go. I've had many candidates in my career that I've had to put somebody next to who they're afraid of, so that they don't go off message.
Now,
and I know he's the former president of the United States, and he's probably not afraid of anybody. But and I love him, and I think he's going to be a great asset down this campaign because Bill Clinton is a campaigner like no other, and you know that, and you'll admit it.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt. I like that idea. The handler, it's like an athlete, a superstar athlete who's always like going off the red, like a Dwight Gooden, although that's a drug problem. But let's look at the woman who might be maybe the second most powerful person in Washington if Hillary gets elected. The gatekeeper would be Huma, the wife of Anthony the Weiner Wiener. What do you do about Anthony? Do you assign a handler to him? Because it could be embarrassing to Huma, which then is embarrassing to Hillary.
I am not worried about Anthony Weiner. I don't think that Anthony Weiner's antics are anything that's going to affect Hillary Clinton. Huma's a sweetheart, and what goes on in her marriage is between her and Anthony. Just as if our marriages are between us and our wives.
You had to mention marriages, Christopher, right? You had to stick to shiving me, huh? Had to mention marriages. Oh, yeah. You see, they always do that. Kuby in the afternoon from 12 to 3. Bernard McGurk, Sid Rosenberg before that in the undercard. Everybody always, the serial marrier, Curtis Lee. Well, guess what, right? Don't think I'm going to make that mistake again, right? What's the over-under point spread?
The Drive at 5, on the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa, live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
She's just like you and me, but she's homeless, she's homeless. As she stands there, singing for money, la-da-dee, la-dee.
528, a tale of two cities. In a city that has no policy whatsoever when it comes to the destitute, the homeless, and the emotionally, I'll call them destroyed, as they roam about like zombies in Dawn of the Dead in the city. Because, as you know, your mayor, comrade Bill de Blasio, he's vacationing. He's smoking the Maui Waui Hindu Kush. He's like so attention deficit disorder. But put that aside. There were two different rallies, two different gatherings in two totally different neighborhoods in opposition to forced homeless housing in the No-Tail Motel Holiday Inns. In fact, remember that advertisement for Holiday Inn Express? What was the one where they say, "You're not Dr. Stewart, but I did stay at a Holiday Express last night." Well, if it happened to be in Maspeth, Queens, and it was October, guess what? You know who's shacking up side by side with you in those rooms? Homeless families. And they're being forced onto that neighborhood. So 1,000 sweaty people showed up at Martin Luther High School. Yeah, I think it's the Lutheran one, not the one near Lincoln Center in Manhattan, out there in Queens. And they're all upset because this is being forced on their neighborhood. Just listen to what some of the neighbors had to say about Comrade Bill de Blasio's plans for Maspeth.
If you look at the homeless shelters around the city, there's crime, there's drug activity, there's you name it. There's child abusers in the homeless shelters. So we don't want any part of it.
Understood. Understood. I could argue that, both pro and con. Here was another outraged homeowner in that neighborhood.
This is our home. We'll make the deals. Not the de Blasio administration, not some commissioner who doesn't live here.
Oh, straight up, you know that. Because that commissioner, you know, he's not living next to a shelter, that's for sure. But, you know, it's ironic that there was some in the crowd who was screaming, because it's mostly white neighborhood, Maspeth, Queens, blue-collar working class, some hipsters and millennials moving in, but predominantly white. And some people screamed, "Hey, send them back to East New York, Brooklyn." Okay, that was off the hook. But what did the Brooklyn Borough President, Eric Adams, who should be indicted any day by Preet Bharara, right, for that crooked nonprofit he set up, what did he have to say? Oh, he attacked the residents of Maspeth. He called them racist. And he said, you know, in our borough of Brooklyn, we're not as Cro-Magnon, as Neanderthal, as backwards as those residents in Maspeth, Queens. And then, lo and behold, I'm looking at Charles Barron. You know Charles Barron? I've described him before. He plays like musical chairs with his wife, Inez. You know, he was the city council person. Now he's the assemblyman. She was the assemblywoman. Now she's the city councilwoman. They're two haters. They hate cops. They hate whites. But they hate homeless people. Oh, yeah, because they led a demonstration outside of their no-tell motel off Stanley Avenue, Stanley and Pennsylvania Avenue. It's the old Galaxy Motel. Ho. You talk about pimp and hoe heaven, right? Man, 1 hour in, 1 hour out. The hot sheet motel. So anyway, de Blasio administration forcing homeless people into East New York. And there was Charles and Inez Barron leading demonstrators, almost all black, some Hispanic, outside, saying no, no to these homeless people. Now, these homeless people were people of color. So is Eric Adams going to turn to Charles and Inez Barron and say, well, we can't be... Wait a second. How are you... That's right, Eric Adams. His complexion is his protection on this. You know, he's going to claim if you're black, you can't be racist against your own peeps, right? So Maspeth doesn't want the homeless people. East New York doesn't want the homeless people. But Eric Adams labels the Maspeth residents as being racist. But Charles and Inez Barron and the black and Hispanic residents of East New York, he remains silent about because they don't want homeless people in their neighborhood either. You fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi, Eric Adams. You belong in jail.
Curtis Lewa, The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Oh, old school jam. On the drive home at 5. I think that was Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, I think. I could be wrong. Song Woolly Bully. I don't think it has any connection to what we're talking about now, a very serious problem. Bullying in the schools, bullying against those of your children and grandchildren, sometimes to the point where, as in the case out at Holy Angels Catholic Academy in Brooklyn, a young boy ended up killing himself, committing suicide as a result of bullying. And now with school soon underway, I know there are a lot of kids out there who escaped the bully at the end of summer. Make that the end of the school year. Now they're having the anxiety attacks again. They're planning to cop a plea like I got a fever in my foot. I can't go back to school knowing they're going to have to face that bully or bullies again. On the line is America's psychologist, as he's joined us before, Dr. Jeff Goodyear. Thanks for joining us on the drive home at 5, Doc.
Curtis, always a pleasure to be on with you.
Okay, so you were counseling parents, other interested parties, teachers, administrators. You were bringing them all together, trying to prepare them for a new school system in which there's going to be more bullying. And I guess the lead into this was that Staten Island teen who took his own life after being bullied?
Well, it really wasn't the lead or really the focus of that particular group. And, you know, I really want to make it clear that no one was placing blame on that particular school that tragic young man attended. I use that as an example of generally how schools are trying to find their footing to address bullying. And the ones who are on their way there aren't always that successful because there's much more that we can do, Curtis. In our schools, we're dealing with this bullying situation every day. And so we all gather together to talk about empowerment strategies and how we can all step up our game to do better to keep our kids from being bullied and to also work with the bullies, not just the victims, but the bullies themselves to look at the psychological issues that they have and how we can assist them, because we have to work with all sides of the equation, the bully, the victim, the parents, the schools, everyone involved, society in general.
All right, but Dr. Jeff Goodyear, do you continue to mix the bullies with their victims while you're in the process of doing that, or do you separate them?
Well, the best practices, and those were some of the things that we talked about as part of the conference, is that we should separate them for, you know, an initial period of time until we can make sure that the victim is completely safe and to be able to help that victim be able to strategize and empower themselves to be in a situation where they feel that they can be themselves, increase their self-esteem. At the same time, in a separate space, and Curtis, you're absolutely right, you're right on it, we have to be able to work with the bully in another space and to find out what is going on at home, what is going on with friends, why are they behaving this way, and how we can get them to be productive citizens again, because they operate out of pain and anger and hurt themselves. And these are all our children,
all right,
and we have to love
but
them.
But Jeff, when you grew up, I grew up, we were simply told, stand up to the bully. They push you, you push them back twice as hard. They hit you, you hit them. Can't do it in school any longer because then you end up getting clipped along with the bully. What do you do if you can't fight back?
Well, you can fight back, but it's not about physically fighting back. It really is about how do we look at the emotional issues that bully may have and have a better understanding of that. And for the victims, what is it that they need to do in order to be able to negotiate around situations of being bullying? So, Curtis, we talked a lot about teaching our kids social skills, being able to teach them kindness, being able to teach them how to have respect for everyone else, and that's the way that we can minimize the situation of bullies and what happens with the victims.
I appreciate that. Dr. Jeff Gadir, American psychology psychologist. I guess you wouldn't want to use the Curtis Leo approach. You bullied me when I was young, and I got you back. I japped you. I followed you, you know, like a ninja. And then when all of a sudden you weren't paying attention, wham! And I made sure you had to wear a cast in the neighborhood. Gee, I don't think that would work out nowadays. You'd probably end up with a record, and they would blame you as being the aggressor instead of the victim fighting back. It's my old school ways.
Curtis Lewa, The Drive at 5.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
A slice and a Coke to go here on The Drive Home at 5. But actually, I'm playing this Dean Martin song, Dean from Steubenville, Ohio, although you would have thought he was a local yokel. It has to do with the many pizza wars that have taken place in my life and times. I'm 62 here. And consistently, bodies have dropped as a result of people battling over the mozzarella cheese, what sauce goes on the pizza, and whose turf that pizza can be sold in. For example, we talked a lot about the murder of the Smamoni Gardens owner. You remember, he was heading home, Louis Barbati. He had two bags of Italian bread for his family that night, $10,000 in scarol, fasools, that was stuck in the bread bag. And some guy came up behind him in his driveway at Dyker Heights and popped him five times. Never stole the money, but that didn't stop the NYPD from saying it was a robbery gone awry. If you remember, I said, get out of here, robbery gone awry. And the NYPD insisted. So as the casket was loaded into the hearse, the NYPD released video of a guy walking near the murder scene who they believe is the killer. They say, it's just a matter of time. We're going to bag and tag this guy. It had absolutely nothing to do with Italian organized crime. The video showed a man wearing a black hoodie and jean shorts. And I read, we haven't heard anything, manga nude since then. And I knew it would be like that. Because I still, to this day, do not believe it was a robbery gone awry. I have traced it to the old battles between the Colombian crime family, the Colombo crime family, which obviously has stakes in the Smamoni Gardens, versus the Bananos, who one time had a guy working at the Smamoni Gardens who, while he was there delivering pizzas and making pizzas, learned the formula for Smamoni Gardens, which is unique. What they do is they have the square pizza, the Sicilian slice, which they're best known for. And then they put the cheese on top and then the sauce on top of the cheese. Unlike other pizza parlors in which, whether it's a regular slice of pizza or if it's a square slice of pizza, Sicilian pizza, it's always sauce first and cheese on top, right? Well, not Smamoni Gardens. And so they take umbrage to anybody who would sort of follow in their footsteps. Apparently this Gavon, this Yadrul, carried the formula for the Smamoni Gardens square pizza back to Staten Island and opened up the square, ironically called the square, on Highland Boulevard, and was doing buffo business. And this Bonanno guy, he was advertising, saying, why spend all that money and get clipped going over the Verrazano Bridge, what we used to call the Guinea Gangplank growing up, when you don't have to go to Brooklyn? You can stay right here in Staten Island and get anything and everything you get at the Smamoni Gardens. And apparently a lot of people believe that advertisement, and they went to Highland Boulevard in the square instead of Smamoni Gardens. The Colombo crime family got angry. They say, hey, what is this? This guy's muscling in on our action. They go over to the square, and remember, they bang on the door. Hey, come on out, come on out. Finally, the guy comes out. There's a dispute. One of the knuckleheads, one of the Jadrules, the knuckle draggers, he pimp slaps him up. It's very embarrassing. The Bananos have a sit-down with the Columbos. About $5,000 is spent to soothe the pain and suffering of the Columbos for losing the Spumoni Gardens Sicilian pizza pie recipe. And it was thought everything was done. But no. See, that Banano crime family guy who owned the square, he's upset, right? He got publicly embarrassed. So I say, instead of looking for this guy that you claim was responsible for a robbery gone awry down there in Dyker Heights in Brooklyn, you really need to be looking into this ongoing altercation between the Bananos and the Columbos. But, hey, they're not going to listen to me at One Police Plaza. And it pimps right into the story of John Gotti. No, not senior. Thank God. He died and went straight to hell without an asbestos suit. Died of one of the worst forms of cancer, throat cancer. Oh, I applauded that. But anyway, he's dead. He's gone. His son, John Gotti Jr., skated, as you know, on the charge of kidnapping and attempted murder of me, although Michael Leonardi, the shooter, he's doing 20 years out in the Italian-American Civil Rights League federal lockup in Lompoc, California. But John Gotti, the grandson, who is the son of Peter Gotti, one of John Gotti Sr.'s sons, brother of John Gotti Jr., he recently got in trouble, as you know, for selling oxycodone. That's right, hillbilly heroin right out of the house of his grandmother, Victoria Gotti Sr. And she obviously knew about it, just like she's known about all the Gotti selling drugs over the years. So he gets cold busted. He's in PC, protective custody, Punk City right now on Rikers Island. That's right. He claims he wants to be in the mix with general population, but he's a fugazi when it comes to that. But interesting, the incestuous relationship he has with the other Gavones in Howard Beach. This guy named Gino Gabrielli, who just happens almost to be related to him because the girlfriend of Gotti, the grandson who is now waiting in Rikers Island for selling oxycodone with Gabriella's sister, Eleanor. But Gino Gabrielli, he wasn't necessarily selling oxycodone. He was a waiter at his grandfather's restaurant, Aldo's Pizzeria on Cross Bay Boulevard. Been there many times. It's a good slice. And he burns a luxury car belonging to the owner of the rival Sophia's Pizzeria in Ozone Park. Hey, they got good pizza too, although I prefer New Park Pizzeria there. And the rival pizza maker was retaliated against. That's why he had his car burned. I don't know if it was a Beamer, a Benz, or a Bentley. But anyway, it was burnt because he had apparently won a concession of a $1,300 catering order away from Aldo's Pizzeria. It happens all the time in business. It's who comes in with a better offer and maybe who provides better service. But not in the world of the pizza wars. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can believe the malarkey that comes out of One Police Plaza when it comes to trying to solve the murder of the Spumoni Gardens owner. You can believe the spin doctors like Arthur Idala, the attorney, who would make you think that the Spumoni Gardens has never had the taint of any ownership of organized crime. Or you can listen to yours truly, Curtis Lee, here on the Drive Home at 5 that says, all roads lead to organized crime when it comes to the Spumoni Gardens and also the torching of the car that belonged to the owner of Sophia's Pizzeria in Ozone Park. There was retaliation for them stealing some business, as they say, from Aldo's Pizzeria on Cross Bay Boulevard.